Hello, this is Kathy. Today is August 24th, 2026, and I am reading the Attleboro Sun Chronicle. As the Clancy case highlights postpartum psychosis, a mom stricken by its shares her story of hope, by Laura Ugar, medical writer. About 2 weeks after giving birth, Bridget Maria Chesterton was curled up on the bathroom floor saying that things that made little sense. Later in the emergency room, she kept repeating, "What's going on?" She'd lost touch with reality. The family eventually learned that Chesterton had postpartum psychosis, a severe mental health disorder thrust into the spotlight by the case of Lindsay Clancy, a Massachusetts woman on trial for strangling her three children. A key question is whether postpartum psychosis drove Clancy to do it. Researchers estimate that the condition, a mental health emergency that is less common than postpartum depression, afflicts 1 to 2 out of 1,000 women after delivery. Although most who develop postpartum psychosis don't harm their children, mothers with severe cases, may try to harm themselves or their kids. If not for medication and strong family support, Chesterton said her own situation could have gone sideways. Chesterton bristles at online comments about the Clancy case, suggesting postpartum psychosis is not a real disorder. She feels driven to raise awareness by sharing her story publicly. A poem she wrote about the experience will be published in a journal this fall. She wants to dispel misconceptions about the widely misunderstood condition and let families know there is hope. "It's something that we do not talk about as a society," said Chesterton, a 52-year-old history professor who lives outside of Buffalo, New York. "I'm not embarrassed about what happened. I want people to know about it." A mom was fine at first and then in bad shape. Chesterton and her husband, James Fitzsimmons, wanted a baby desperately and underwent fertility treatment for years. She finally got pregnant in her mid-40s and had severe asthma during the pregnancy that put her in the hospital. She gave birth to her daughter by C-section in January 2019. About 2 months early. "Everything about bringing her into the world was awful," Chesterton said. "It was the longest 7 months of my life. Just after the birth, the baby was hurried off to the neonatal intensive care unit, where she spent her first weeks of life. To protect the child's privacy, the Associated Press is withholding her name at the family's request." Chesterton went home and seemed fine at first. But the day Fitzsimmons found her on the bathroom floor, her family said she had trouble remembering basic details of her life and made strange comments such as, "It's meditation day," even though she doesn't meditate. Fitzsimmons called his wife's mom, Maria Chesterton, who met the couple at the hospital. "She didn't even remember having a baby," the elder Chesterton said. "She knew us vaguely. People with certain conditions are more likely to be affected. Disorganized thinking and delusions are among the symptoms of postpartum psychosis, which also may include hallucinations, paranoia, agitation, and mood changes. Postpartum depression, by contrast, is a mood disorder affecting about 1 in 7 women after giving birth, or more, according to some research. Postpartum psychosis can happen to anyone after giving birth, but the chances are higher for people with certain mental health conditions, such as bipolar disorder. Chesterton didn't have such conditions, said Dr. Emily Williams of Buffalo, OBGYN, one of her doctors. Chesterton was transferred to Bryan Hospital in Buffalo, which provides crisis mental health care, and spent about 2 weeks there. Her mom, who was staying at the couple's house to help out, remembers visiting her with food and Valentine's Day chocolates. "When she was released, she did okay for a few days," her mom remembers, "and then just lost it. She stared blankly ahead, not knowing where she was or what was happening. She did manage to aggressively express that she didn't want to go back to the same place she'd just left. So she was institutionalized involuntarily. We had no choice, her mother said. She was in bad shape. She stayed for another 2 weeks, apart from her baby. I was kind of lucky that she was in the NICU, Chesterton said, because we had somebody to take care of her when I was so sick. Medication and family support help a mom recover. Chesterton believes antipsychotic drugs ultimately brought her back to reality, but just as essential was the support of her family. When the baby came home after nearly 2 months at the hospital, her team of helpers included her husband, mom, dad, and postpartum doula. She helped me learn how to take care of the baby, remember her, you know, to become a parent again, Chesterton said, adding that she knows how lucky she is that her family had the resources to provide such care. Williams, the doctor, said family support is crucial in the postpartum period, even if everything is going well. The more hands on deck, the better, she said. Over the next several months, it was as if a fog lifted slowly. We could see improvement in her. It was a little bit at a time, her mother said. She was taking care of the baby. The glassy-eyed look was gone. Chesterton stayed on antipsychotics for about a year. By her daughter's first birthday, she was back to normal. Doctor encourages families to be on alert for signs of trouble. Williams said Chesterton's family did the right thing when they took quick action after the symptoms arose. Sometimes, the doctor said, people may deny that something so serious could be wrong with a loved one's mental health and attribute signs of postpartum psychosis to things like needing more sleep. Chesterton's mother advised other families to be vigilant for signs of the illness, then come together to shepherd loved ones through it. If my daughter would not have had the support, she said, I don't know how this would have turned out. Shelley Fabre, Johnny Angel singer and actor in The Donna Reed Show and Coach, dies at 82, by Lindsay Barr. Shelley Fabre, an actor who was a fixture on television for decades from her days as a young teenager on The Donna Reed Show and through One Day at a Time, as well as Coach, has died. She was 82. She died Saturday in Los Angeles, her family said in a statement to the Associated Press. No cause was given. To her family and friends, Shelley was a source of love, strength, laughter, and comfort, her family wrote. She had a remarkable ability to make people feel welcome, valued, and cared for. Fabre was born in Santa Monica, California, in 1944, and started acting as a young child. Her first television credit came at the age of 10 when she appeared on The Loretta Young Show. Many movies and television shows followed. She acted with Paul Newman, Frank Sinatra, and Eva Marie Saint in the producer's showcase production of Our Town, was in the Rosalind Russell movie, The Girl Rush, and the Rock Hudson drama, Never Say Goodbye. Other early credits include Annette, Captain Midnight, Black Leather Jackets episode, and an episode of The Twilight Zone. Her biggest break came when she was cast as Mary Stone on The Donna Reed Show, where she was a regular from 1958 through 1963. During that time, she also got a recording contract and had two top 40 hits, including Johnny Angel. In the early 1960s, she also co-starred in three movies with Elvis Presley, Girl Happy, Spin Out, and Clambake. I think the years on the Donna Reed Show, the years from 14 to 19, were so incredibly important, Fabre told the Los Angeles Times in 1993. Donna Reed was simply an extraordinary woman, a woman of great strength, kindness, integrity, and compassion. I am not trying to make her sound like a saint, but she had the most profound influence on me. I carry her with me today. In the late 1970s, Fabre made an impression on Francine Webster on the CBS sitcom One Day at a Time. She also played James Caan's wife in Brian's Song. One of her biggest roles came when she was cast as Christine Armstrong in Coach, although the show took a minute to find its audience. I did always feel from the very beginning if they could find the right spot for us, this was the show that would last, she said in the 1993 Los Angeles Times interview. February, married twice, first to producer Lou Adler in 1964. She had been married to MASH actor Mike Farrell since 1984. She was also a devoted advocate for Alzheimer's awareness, which affected her mother. In early 1999, a visit to the emergency room for an esophageal bleed revealed she had progressive liver failure. After spending 22 months on the waiting list, she had a liver transplant surgery in October 2000. In an interview with Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles 3 years after the transplant, she said she'd been changed by the experience and was eternally grateful to Farrell, who was with her every step of the way. Her family, in their statement, said, "We will remember Shelley for her kindness, loyalty, wit, courage, and beautiful spirit. We will miss her deeply, not only as a celebrated performer, but as the loving and extraordinary person she was in our everyday lives." Boston Symphony Orchestra and musicians extend contract for 48 hours, a sign they may avert strike. Boston. The Boston Symphony Orchestra and its musicians have decided to extend their collective bargaining agreement for 48 hours, a sign they could be nearing a deal to head off what would have been the first strike in the ensemble's 145-year history. The Boston Musicians Association said Saturday it had authorized a strike ahead of the expiration of the union's 3-year contract at 11:59 p.m. Sunday. The BSO and the musicians said Sunday the contract had been extended to 11:59 p.m. Tuesday. BSO CEO Chad Smith said Sunday that the extension had been agreed to pending a ratification vote by BMA and the Boston Symphony Orchestra's Players Committee. The orchestra and management have had strained relations since BSO decided in March to force out music director Idris Nelson's next summer after 13 seasons. The orchestra's season is scheduled to open September 17th. Lindsay Clancy trial enters week 5 as a prosecution rebuttal continues Monday by Charlie McKenna. Plymouth testimony continues Monday morning at the trial of Lindsay Clancy, the Duxbury woman charged in the killings of her 3 young children in January 2023. Defense attorney Kevin Reddington is set to resume his cross-examination Monday of Dr. Avram Mack, the first of 3 experts testifying as the prosecution's rebuttal. Clancy's defense rested on Friday after calling its 10th and final witness, Dr. Philip Resnick. Clancy, 36, is charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder in connection with the deaths of Cora, 5, Dawson, 3, and Callan, 8 months old. Her defense claimed she was experiencing postpartum psychosis when she killed him, and Clancy has reported hearing a voice urging her to kill the children and end her life. Prosecutors, though, contend Clancy was not psychotic and made a conscious decision to kill the 3 children because she no longer liked her life. Judge William F. Sullivan assured jurors the trial was definitely well on schedule before sending them home for the weekend. Monday marks the start of the trial's 5th week, and closing arguments are expected whenever the prosecution's rebuttal concludes, potentially as early as Tuesday. City Council to consider commission to maintain Attleboro War monuments by Ryan Whitkins, Attleboro. The city is considering creating a commission to maintain aging war monuments. Veterans agent Ben Quell told the City Council at its most recent meeting that when the city was first exploring areas of the city's new Global War on Terror monument, which ultimately found its home on Capron Park, where it was erected in May, consultants looked at Veterans Memorial Common as a potential option. While they were on site, they were looking at our other monuments, the names and the pillars at the Commons, and they were picking up a lot of the degradation of some of our monuments just based on age and weather, Quell told the council. I mean, this is New England, and we get the harshest of weather. He said even monuments made of stone, granite, and brass eventually begin to show their age. Quell said some monuments would require only a simple power washing, while others might require waterproofing. A lot of water gets behind these brass fittings, and they start rusting them out, he said. He added that some monuments have flagpoles, many of which are starting to rust and rot to the point where they are no longer usable. The ropes have gotten out, the trucks on top are rusted out, and some of the brass that brings the flags up and down have all broken off, he said. Mayor Kathleen DeSimone first proposed the idea of a committee to Quell. Under the proposal, DeSimone would appoint 3 to 5 commission members with the approval of City Council. At least one member must be a veteran or service member. The commission would draw up an inventory of the monuments, schedule annual assessments of their condition, and recommend maintenance to the Director of the Veterans Services, according to the proposal. The commission could also recommend any new memorials for the city. In addition, the city would establish a donation fund to pay for monument maintenance costs. The fund would supplement money the city already sets aside for maintenance. The mayor and I just want to present to the council the need of having a small committee of concerned citizens that would get together and start to inventory this quite large collection of valuable war monuments and start coming up with ideas, Quell said. We can actually go to outside resources and come up with what we need to get these things looking the way they should. Iran warns of a harsh response to anticipated U.S. sanctions and other Middle East news. Associated Press. Iran warned that U.S. sanctions set to be announced Monday would not bring peace to the region. Meanwhile, Israeli and Syrian officials met less than a week after Israeli strikes in Syria, and Israel said it killed a Hamas commander in Gaza. Here's a look at the latest developments in the Iran war and the wider Middle East on Monday. Iran threatens response ahead of U.S. sanctions announcement. Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson warned that Tehran would respond harshly to expanded U.S. sanctions, including measures against countries it sees as cooperating with Washington. Any escalation of this situation will undoubtedly bring about consequences, as Malbeghani said. Our hands are not tied. The new head of Iran's top security body warned Sunday that Tehran will see any country's support for the sanctions as an act of war. The expanded sanctions come after weeks of impasse. The United States has not dislodged Iran's grip on the Strait of Hormuz, though through which a fifth of the world's trade oil passed before the war started nearly 6 months ago. Iran's demands for reopening the strait include lifting U.S. naval blockade, withdrawing U.S. forces from the region, and reparations for damages sustained in the war. It has held separate talks with Oman on the other side of the strait on jointly managing the waterway regardless of whether a new deal is brokered with the U.S. Sanctions have historically raised prices of basic goods in Iran, but after decades of withstanding them, Iran's economy has adapted through finding new trading partners and building domestic industries. Ahead of the expected U.S. announcement, the country's currency hit a low, record low, on Monday. Israeli and Syrian officials meet following an Israeli airstrike. Syrian Foreign Minister Assad al-Shabani met over the weekend with high-level Israeli delegation in Jordan to try to defuse tensions after Israel last week struck an airbase in northern Syria. Syrian state news agency Sana reported. The U.S. mediated discussions on Sunday focused on restarting negotiations for a future security agreement, Sana said. Israel struck the Abu Dhuhr air base in Idlib province, saying it aimed to stop Turkey, which has supported the new Syrian government efforts to rebuild its armed forces after 14 years of civil war, from establishing a presence there. Syrian officials during the talks asserted the right to develop an army and freely forge alliances with any country, Sana said. They also called for the withdrawal of Israeli forces from a buffer zone in southern Syria they have occupied since December 2024, and reiterated Syria's stance that the Golan Heights, which Israel captured in 1967 Mideast War and later annexed, is Syrian territory. Israeli officials didn't immediately comment on the meeting. Israel says it killed another Hamas militant. Israel's military said it killed a militant affiliated with Hamas's Special Forces unit in an overnight strike, the latest targeted killing announced since U.S. officials met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu last week, hoping to push last year's ceasefire deal forward. Israel says it targets and kills Palestinian militants it says participated in the October 7, 2023 attack that sparked the war. Israel has announced targeted strikes on six of the 7 days since U.S. negotiator Jared Kushner's meeting with Netanyahu. At least 1,288 Palestinians have been killed since the ceasefire took effect last October, according to Gaza's health ministry, part of the Hamas-run government. Its numbers are generally considered reliable by the international community. Palestinian American says he can't freely leave West Bank home. The Palestinian American homeowner, whose residence was besieged this month by Israeli settlers, said he remained unable to move freely in the village of Qusar in the occupied West Bank. Louis Riddy traveled from Ohio to join his relatives defending his home a week ago. The Israeli military declared the area a closed zone to restore order in Qusar. Riddy said settlers returned throughout the week to the hill above his house. Since Israeli settlers surrounded the house more than 2 weeks ago, preventing occupants from leaving, Israeli soldiers have encouraged them to leave, but Israel's police have not announced arrests. The siege and Israel's response have sparked condemnation from Israeli rights group and foreign officials, including U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee, who called the violence terrorism. Palestinians consider the West Bank home to some 3 million Palestinians and 560,000 Israeli settlers, the heart of any future state, and have condemned Israel's expansion there. This year has seen a dramatic spike in violence carried out by Israeli settlers against Palestinians. Arrest warrant issued for Massachusetts woman sought in officer's death. Worcester. An arrest warrant has been issued for a mental health advocate who remained missing Saturday, more than 4 days after police found the Massachusetts officer she had been married to dead in their home. Karen Solomon, 58, was last spotted in a doorbell camera video walking down a street in a t-shirt, shorts, and flip-flops early Tuesday morning, just minutes after Worcester police officers responded to a call from the home where Kurt Solomon was found dead. Worcester Police Chief Saucer said the warrant charges Karen Solomon with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon. Saucier said Kurt Solomon, a 31-year veteran officer, was mortally injured with a sharp object. He wouldn't say what. Meanwhile, the city of Worcester said Friday that public spaces around Coe's Palm will remain closed as a search involving dive teams and police dogs continues. Kurt was a hell of a guy. He was an awesome police officer and an awesome person, and he's going to be truly missed, Saucia said. A wake will be held on Tuesday and his funeral on Wednesday, the chief said. Karen Solomon, who wrote two books about the physical and psychological experiences of first responders and helped start FIRST, H-E-L-P, an organization that advocates for their mental health. The Solomons shared a home and had been married, court records indicated, but authorities declined to discuss their current relationship, citing domestic violence privacy rules. Concert fined by Foxborough for violating Gillette curfew by Stephen Peterson. Usher and Chris Brown concert Monday night exceeded the Gillette Stadium curfew, and tour officials have paid the town $22,760 in fines. The concert was scheduled to start at 8 p.m. and went over the 11 p.m. curfew by 25 minutes. There was noise complaints, town manager Paige Duncan said, noting the Stadium Advisory Committee had been notified. We'll navigate how to address that. The town gets 25 cents per show attendee for violations. Last August, country singer Morgan Wallen paid the town $15,705 for running past Gillette's strict curfew. The curfew was 11:30 p.m. for that show, which is typical for a weekend concert. Developers seek to revive New England Sports Village in Attleboro by Ryan Watkins. New England Sports Village, an ice skating and hockey rink on Commerce Way, was once intended to be the first phase of a much larger sports complex. But after the original developers were threatened with foreclosure, they filed for bankruptcy to stop a planned foreclosure auction and later abandoned the project. Developers have recently begun trying to revive the center in what they say is a more scaled-back, economically feasible way. The facility is used by local school ice hockey teams. David Boucher, the original developer, proposed the then $40 million project to the city in 2014, and construction began in 2016 on the 104-acre parcel. He and his partners built the existing ice rink, cleared land behind it, built a temporary exit, and constructed part of a bridge that was supposed to serve as the main entrance over the wetlands on the property. Jack Jacoby, a Coogan Smith lawyer representing the project now, said the goal is to develop all the original facilities except the tennis courts and pool. Developers also plan to build only on the west side of the large wetland area on the property and leave the east side undeveloped. The board granted them 2-year-long permits, but when it came time to renew the permit, the developers went bankrupt originally, Jacoby said. Jacoby said he expects the permitting process to take through to the end of the year. If the project receives approval, developers hope to begin construction in the spring of 2027.